The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's it with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. Go this week, it's episode 14. It's Joe Sims. We were thrilled to have Joe on. He'd been a massive supporter of the podcast from day one. I'm recording this and I've been in London filming all week and I'm shattered. But Joe was he was just like a proper shining beacon of positivity. We'd had a couple of days of recording and he welcomed us with a beautiful tea, lovely pastries, into his home. We had a right good natter. The one thing I do have to tell you is we pick up this after a computer crash. This never happens. Producer Griff was gutted. He couldn't get it back, so we lost the first 25 minutes of mine and Joe nattering on. He didn't miss that much. We pick it up when Joe's at school. I hope it all pieces together. I think it does. I think it's brilliant. I think, you know, in this day and age, we need a lot of positivity in our lives. And Joe Sims is the man to bring it to you this Thursday. Brilliant. How fantastic that he's on. Usually I do this at the end. I want to tell you that the emails and messages on social media that we get from you they make our day. It's the interaction is one of the reasons why we did it. The fact that you're loving what we do makes our day. If it's making a difference to you, then we're thrilled. So get in touch on the email. It's twoshotpod@gmail.com on the email. You know social media, of course you do. It's at twoshotpod. It's easy. That's on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. If you want to get in touch with me, I'm at cparks1976. It all links up, so we get it all. And we're thrilled to get it. And what can I say about the Patreon site we set up? The fact that you are throwing us a few quid every month means everything to us. But just think, for every person that downloaded this podcast, if you gave us £1, one single pound every month, we would be able to make this podcast for, I don't know, a couple of years at least. I've just got to sort out all the guests. But luckily for you, we have got so many amazing people coming up and we've got a Christmas special and it's not a two shot. Well, it is. It's a two-shot podcast, but it's not two people. It's going to be me and six people. I'm not going to tell you any more than that. But just know it is going to be very, very exciting. I've already been told I've got to get a couple of bottles of wine in. So that'll make it interesting. And it's not just actors. And speaking of not just actors, in 2018, right? Can you say 2018 or is it 2018? You know what I'm saying. You know we've been doing actors since we started. And it's why we started. It's why we wanted to do it. And we're still going to keep on doing that, of course. But from January, we're going to be opening it up. So I'm going to be getting on a lot of creative types of people. So I'm going to get on poets. I'm going to get on directors. I'm getting writers. I'm getting musicians. I'm getting DJs. We've also been invited to take the Two Shot Podcast live next year. We are going to be doing, definitely, work permitting, obviously, we're definitely doing one live session at a festival next year. I can't tell you any more yet, but we're going to be doing at least three podcasts live in front of an audience. And we're thrilled. We couldn't be more excited. But stay excited right now, because this is episode 14 with Mr. Joe Sims. Enjoy.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
I was academically at school. How were you? Did you throw yourself into it with as much sort of gusto as you did with the sports and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't tearing up trees academically. It was one of those things. I had a teacher who used to say, because I was quite noisy, he used to say, empty vessels make most sound. that rattles in my head sometimes. But I wasn't particularly academic, but again, like, you know, I was happy enough to be there and I was happy enough to, like, you know, to muddle through and learn. I used to like subjects like history and things like that, 20th century history in particular, I thought was fascinating, sociology, all that kind of stuff. But I never really had much of an aptitude for things like maths and, like, you know, anything with structure to it. I, like, you know, just was lost on me just because I wasn't interested, really, like, you know, as interested in maths. Felt a little bit too kind of formulaic and stuff. I liked developing arguments and getting involved in
debate,
discussion. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I still do. I find it fascinating. I find the human condition, in fact, like, fascinating, and people. I feel like everybody's got a story to tell, and everyone's got something exciting to say. You know, sometimes I feel like people sometimes describe me as happy-go-angry.
Where does the angry come from? Are you not telling me here? What's going on? Where's the angry come from?
Vociferous in my point of view. Like, you know, I feel like I got to, like, you know, 37, and, you know, I feel like I read as much as I can, but I'm vociferous in my, like in terms of my outlook, because I feel like that elicits the best conversation in people. You know, sometimes I think if you press those buttons in people, they say things that they might not ordinarily have said.
So you want, it's a conscious thing that you want to start a debate.
Yeah, not to be a dick, but no. Like, you know, just to, because I find people fascinating. fascinating. And actually, when you get someone going, like, you know, they like, you know, and you're thinking, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I won't ever, like, you know, necessarily concede during the course of a conversation. It's fun to play devil's advocate because I feel like, you know, for me, acting and in real life, you know, it's a lifelong apprenticeship. I want to get better as a person than I was yesterday. Like, you know, so I want to be better tomorrow than I am today.
Yeah.
You know? And I can only do that through meeting, like, the finest, most interesting people in the world and seeing what they got to say.
Yeah.
You know, and also, like, you know, I don't feel like people can just get away with just making blanket statements and stuff without having to quantify them, because that makes you lazy.
Sure.
And that's why, you know, people are allowed, like, you know, why we live in a world that we live in where, like, you know, racism prevails, or like in certain, like, you know, in certain parts of the world, or homophobia prevails and all that kind of thing, is because people are never questioned. You know, or like, you know, I'm made to think about, like, you know, why they've arrived at these decisions.
Of course.
And, you know, that's important to me. And I feel like, you know, it's a, you know, it's a lifelong.
Do you think that came from your parents, or is that just something with, is your brother like this? Is your brother real part? Because what I'm getting at the moment is you have a great, you're very positive.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
You would prefer to be a positive person in a negative world.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But also, I see brilliance and I see... Oh, God, I'm saying so, I'm such a wanker. But I see brilliance, I see beauty everywhere. Like my nan was poorly in, like, you know, and like, you know, she didn't survive in the end. But, you know, while she was in palliative care, I remember the Sally Army, like, you know, singing at Christmas and things like that. And, like, you know, the nurses, they don't do it for a round of applause, like, you know, or, like, you know, or to be written about in papers or anything like that, but roll up their sleeves and dig in every day to make people's life just a little bit better. Teachers, they don't just turn up for the money, but play their classes like symphonies and stay late all the time, like, you know, and run different, like, you know, clubs, like English booster clubs and maths booster clubs, like, you know, boxing, like, you know, football, all those kind of things. I'm so grateful to those teachers that did that for me. And I'm so grateful for teachers and nurses and doctors. Like, people go above and beyond. And I see those people everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're never talked about. Like, we're always talked about, like, you know, the state of the world and what a rubbish place it all is and stuff like that. And it's not going to hell in a handcart. It's not. Not when there's that many good people ready to stand. We just need to kind of, we need to galvanise. We need to stand shoulder to shoulder and shout louder about the beauty in the world and how nice there are, how many nice people there are just doing fantastic stuff.
I think you need to go into politics, Joe. I'm already inspired, man. This is amazing stuff.
But that's the thing. Like, but I'm inspired by people every day. These people, like, I started this this group, and it's essentially, we get... It was like me, myself and a few friends, like four friends, and we got 500 of our mates to set up a standing order of £1.
Wait a minute, you've got 500 mates?
Between
all of you?
Yeah.
I was going to say, I've got like about five.
So we got like 100 mates each to set up the standing order of £1 a week. And those people, those 500 people then, can like write into us and just go and nominate someone who'd be a beneficiary for £500 each week. So like, you know, so for example, there's a couple of brothers in their 60s in a council estate, that one of my friends knew, and his brother was agoraphobic and, his brother just lost his job. And so they didn't know they were going to afford to pay the rent and all that kind of stuff. So we had £500, went to them, filled up their fridge and their freezer. There was a social worker who was part of our group who went down there and filled out all the requisite forms and got those boys back on track. This week it was a wonderful lady who sadly, like both her mum and dad live in Australia, got cancer. So we got £500 to fly her back so she could be with her mum and dad. You know, like that's those little things. It's only £500, but every week, like it brings tears to my eyes. Like I just, like, you know, it makes me so happy to see that, like, you know, every week we get to, like, you know, us 500 people just get to help someone out, and it's like completely well, before it is.
Joe, this is a BBC Sunday Night TV show hosted by Davina McCall.
I mean,
this is what you should... I've never heard anything like this. That's a really beautiful, positive thing, man. That's lovely.
But it's a drip in a bucket. I couldn't be a nurse. I don't like blood or like anything like those kind of things. These people just do incredible stuff. And there's heroes everywhere.
Just
the ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and that's what I find absolutely humbling. But we just got to find a way of getting all these people together and just
supporting them.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just make the world a better place. There's enough of us. There's way more nicer people than there are evil, ugly people.
That is so.
It's just we have to shout that much louder because they seem to be given a soapbox to be able to project their kind of nastiness and their their ugliness in papers that we know about that we won't mention, and the nice people just have to work so much harder to get noticed because you don't get the column inches that way.
Well, sometimes I think it's a very sort of British thing over here that, especially with the papers and certainly some papers, They build these people up in whatever form it is, and I'm not just saying actors, but they build them up, put them on a pedestal, and as soon as something happens, they take it away and they can't wait for it to crash down, and then they're on them. And that's where all the hate comes in.
Yeah.
It's a bloody nightmare.
Well, I remember, I don't know if I should mention names, but I remember there was
Mention it, but can always edit
it. Okay, yeah, right. Saying, well, I remember Frank Lampard, I was listening to Talk Radio. I know you're not a football fan, but Frank Lampard,
I'm aware of who he is.
Central midfielder. And he just split up with his missus, and they were just talking about it on Talk Radio, just talking about it on Talk Sport. And he rang up, and he was like, "What are you doing?" And they were like, "Well, what do you mean?" He was like, "I'm dying here." He was like,
"That's my personal life.
My life partner, and it's all going horrible, and you just feel like it's like some salacious tittle tattle, which is just in a public forum." He's like, "I play football for a living," and he was like, "I appreciate it, that people might make mention of it or whatever in passing comments." But he went, he's like, "You're people that I know, and and I come on your show and whatever, and I talk," and he was like, "And he went, I'm listening to the radio and I'm hearing you talking about things that." That matter to me. I'm still a human being. And you're you are. I mean, there's some fantastic journalists that do incredible work, but there's also
a lot of hacks as well.
Yeah, of course, just bottom feeders.
But sometimes when there's a huge argument when people say, "Well, if you put yourself out there in the public domain, it's fair game," and I don't think that's necessarily true.
I couldn't agree more. I guess if you're going to be one of the kind of people that probably kind of seek that out, and you're kind of falling out of clubs or you get on the front foot and you court that kind of publicity, then maybe
conversely. And if you want that, then it's there for
you. If that's why you've bought a ticket, then I suppose that's...
Get on that train.
Yeah, well, that's it, get on the train. But I think that, if you just happen to be an actor or a footballer or someone in the public eye, doing a job, and you don't kind of call that publicity, then I think that probably a degree of respect should be afforded to you.
Yeah.
But, also, I feel if you're going to be in the public eye, then it's quite nice to be a good role model as well. To behave accordingly, but if you split up with your missus, that can be no fault of your own, can it?
No, of course.
For whatever reason, you're kind of dying inside, then that shouldn't just be just there for the whole country to be judged. You're an executioner of what you've done right or wrong.
But they do love it, don't they? They love a story.
Isn't it a shame though that we don't have that same kind of fervor excitement for a teacher that works 60, 70 hours a week or whatever and gets a working class kid into Cambridge or something that. Why isn't that as exciting?
Why isn't that front page?
Yeah,
news?
That's it. Wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah. All these nurses that work so tirelessly for next to no money or whatever.
Yeah.
Saving lives every day. That's incredible stuff. Doctors that are truly saving lives. Well, why isn't that splashed across the front page of tabloids and stuff?
Maybe it'll inspire somebody else.
Well, that's the thing. Each one teach one. You take what you've got and you try and pay it forward.
Yeah.
And if you've got a platform, the tabloids that everybody reads or whatever to read this wonderful stuff, then it gathers momentum, doesn't it?
Sure, yeah, yeah. Mm. Joe, was drama on the curriculum at your school, or was it something that you sought out sort of after hours?
No, it was it was on the curriculum at school. I took it as a GCSE.
How did you find it?
I had a wonderful teacher called Mandy Langston, and that's another
big shout out to Mandy.
Big shout out to Mandy. She's an amazing lady. And I think that, you know, that's another thing that listening to your podcast come up time and time again. That you have an individual that just stands up for you, a kind of a movable force to your unstoppable object, and gives you a sense of direction and a sense of purpose. And like I say, I didn't know what I would have done. I didn't have any kind of, I had nothing that I particularly wanted to do or got it, and then all of a sudden the drama and that feeling of,
did it focus you a bit? Because obviously from what I'm hearing at the moment at school, you were dipping your toe in all these sports and extracurricular stuff. Did drama sort of hone that and focus into a line that you wanted to go down?
It just shows you that anything's possible, really. You have these ideas. There was a lot of kind of improvisation-led stuff where you're thinking, these are just things that are occurring to me. And I'm stood there in front of a group of people and people are laughing.
Was it the laughter that got you at first?
Yes, mate. Yeah, I mean, because...
approval of the audience.
Of course, because before that, you're doing it in classrooms and stuff and everyone's laughing and
then you're getting told off for it.
Yeah, you get told off for it. But then all of a sudden, you get given this kind of consequence-free environment where you can just play and, if it goes well, you're kind of revered and then comes the discipline and the direction. But first of all, it's that kind of intoxicating feeling that people are responding really warmly to the things that you're doing. And that for the first time in my life, how lucky, to think that at 13, I got that taste of it.
Or was it that young? It was about 13.
And I was like, right, that's what I want to do. And I've not deviated from that plan. I mean, it took me ages to kind of get there to be in a position now where that's what pays the mortgage. But it's been mint. All of it's been mint.
Was the next step after that, after GCSE? What was your focus then? Did you go into A-levels or did you go into college?
I left school when I was 16. And my dad said to me, right, okay, if you're going to leave school, you're not going to go to college. He was like, I'll buy you a suit so you can go to interviews and all that kind of thing. But then it's 50 quid a week, given to your ma for your rent. And I was like, right, okay, here we are then. So I did a few different jobs. Then I got a job as a runner at HGV because I was at, first of all, I was at Bristol Vic Youth Theatre group.
What age were you there for?
14. I was only there for a short time.
Was that because it capped it at 16, or you just left? Or
it's such a strange one because I had a really good and bad experience there. It was really good in so much as I met Andy Hay, who was the artistic director. Yeah. It was absolutely fantastic, and he lit a fire in me. Where all of a sudden as well as this amazing drama teacher, you've got an industry professional who's like, you're good at this, you could do this.
Supportive.
Yeah. But actually, some of the kids, I think I suffered retrospectively with inverted snobbery. A lot of kids there were really posh. Their parents would turn up in Beamers and Mercs and all that kind of thing. And I would go and have a cigarette, at a break or whatever, and no one would smoke with me or whatever. Because I felt at the time I was the only Bristolian kiddie there.
And at the Bristol Vic Youth.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they're all from Bristol, but they're all from Bristol that I didn't understand.
Yeah. Right, so the different sections. So we're talking about class now, aren't we?
Yeah. And I now know that a lot of that was probably just as much my fault. But I remember being really frustrated that, if people were being dicks to you in my school, you'd sort it out. It'd be the staying circle at 3:30 and you would duke it out. But these people for the first time were just mean in a different way. They weren't big or aggressive, so it didn't seem right to fight. But they were spiteful and they were cruel and it really upset me. And I used to come away and I remember leaving this one day. I'm getting upset just even thinking about it. I went out and I went and met around the corner, my old man's parked in his Fiesta or whatever. We jumped in and I was like, I went, and it was more just anger and frustration than anything. I was just like, they ain't talking to me. I was like, no one's talking to me. And I was like, I want a wallflower or anything like that. I was like, no one talks to me. No one wants to hang around with me. I'm trying my best. I got nothing. All they're doing is just being mean and horrible. And our old man went, why do you think I park around the corner? He was just like, it's like all the same with the parents waiting. He went, I'd sit there and like, you know, stand there and wait on my own. He's like, you know, and all the parents, like, you know, obviously knew one another or whatever. So I was like, he went, let's not go back there.
Right.
And, so what do you and think- I didn't go back. And I want to caveat by saying now, Bristol Old Vic, like, is absolutely incredible. Like, I've kind of shared this story, like, you know, with the people who work there now. And they've got an outreach project, which is absolutely amazing. And they were like, we would love to have you involved. I was like, I absolutely want to go there. The schools, like my own school, whatever, that, like, you know, might have been kind of discounted if it wouldn't have been for a very proactive drama teacher. Like, I'm going into the inner city schools in Bristol now, and I'm working with kids, and like, you know, and like, you know, just having like Q&A's and stuff and doing workshops and all that kind of thing, getting them excited and making it accessible. And Bristol Vic go out of their way as well to give them like theatre tickets, get them involved.
And letting them know that it's anything's possible.
It's their theatre, it's their space. I just presented this brilliant day where, if, like, you know, you had to show a degree of proficiency or whatever, but if you're a singer, a magician, like, you know, an actor, or if you've got something, if you're from Bristol or the surrounding areas and you've got something that you wanted to show to your friends and family, free to get in and all that kind of thing, like, they got to perform on this amazing stage. Like, you know, it's the oldest working theatre in the country.
It's a beautiful thing,
isn't it? And that's the thing that Bristol Old Vic are doing now. They're putting one foot in front of the other and they're doing such outstanding work. I taught when I was back, because I was living in Bristol when my girlfriend was pregnant, and I went to Bristol Vic and I was just like, look, if there's anything I can do, I want to be part of this. And they were so welcoming, they were so brilliant, and I was teaching that adult acting class. And again, it's not necessary for people that want, like, you know, that are going to be doing it as a profession, but for people that were interested in acting. So, yeah, like, people that I was teaching, like, some of them were, like, you know, one lad was a gardener, one was a teacher that wanted to be a better teacher because a lot of her kids are going to drama school or auditioning for drama school, and she wanted to be able to support them. Some people just wanted to, like, you know, to go for, like, you know, the company or whatever. And
well,
so,
there is things that, you know, because my wife's started a community drama club in Stroud, and it all became, it was a conversation between three girls who kind of had an inkling that they wanted to act.
Great.
But they didn't want to go and do local amateur dramatics who put on, you know, musicals, and nothing against that, but that's fine, that's what they do. It's like a machine. They put on the musicals and they put on the panto, or they might do a pop in an Agatha Christie. They wanted to do Shakespeare, or they wanted to do some sort of American play that no one had heard of. They wanted to try and create and learn and learn and learn. And she started that, and that sounds exactly like what you're doing.
I loved, like, you know, like, I loved your Mrs. podcast for that, because, like, you know, when she was saying that someone wrote to her, and she was like, yeah, of course, why not? Like I feel like we've all got an obligation, like, you know, like, to not kick the last rung of the ladder away. Like, you know, like, you know, like, we've got an opportunity. If someone writes to you and, like, you know, goes, oh, I really like your work or whatever, like, you know, he gives a hand. And if you've got the time and the inclination, what a lovely thing that is. And idea of getting someone like your missus, whatever, to help, like, you know, like, you know, to help someone along, I can't think of a better role model. I mean, you've properly lucked out. In fact, if she's listening, I'd like for her to come and help me with my acting, because she's mint.
She is. She's full time trying to help me with mine at the moment. So.
Well, you're on the right route, mate. You're pretty handy as well.
I'm trying. So between you and your dad, you went, right, yeah, this ain't, it's not health, it wouldn't be a healthy environment for you to carry on there.
No,
in Bristol.
I didn't, like, you know, I didn't feel that. And again, I think a lot of it's inverted snobbery. A lot of this thing might have been in my own head. I wasn't as comfortable in my own shoes probably as I am now, you know. And in actual fact, I've met people from all different social stratas that are incredible. I worked with a teacher in an inner city school in London, and he went to Eton, and he was the finest human being I ever met. But when I first met him, like, you know, my chest puffed out, just going, oh yeah, okay then, you know, you're just there for a little bit of poverty porn or whatever, like, yeah, you're just doing your thing so you can run back to Kent or whatever and be whoever you want to be. And that was completely my hang up, because he got his, like I say, like played his class like a symphony. And he would say things like, he went, if you don't understand anything that happens in this class, that's not your fault. That's my fault. He was like, so if anyone's laughing at you, you're laughing at me because I don't know how to get this, communicate across, this message to you. And he would say things like about reading and stuff like that. He was just going, it's hard now. I know it's hard. But he was like, he went, it doesn't matter how much money you got or how much, like where you are in the world. If you can learn how to do this, you're painting pictures with your mind. And I loved him. Like, you know, like by the end of it, I can't believe I was paid to be his assistant because I just found him to be one of the most inspirational people I've ever met. And like, you know, and he would be like, oh, listen, I'm running a football class. He didn't know too much about football, or whatever, like after school club for these kids. Like, you know, would you mind hanging about? Of course I wouldn't mind hanging about. He did maths booster classes, did English every night for five, like, you know, all 5 nights we would stay an hour behind and like, you know, and take these kids. A lot of them didn't really have a lot of male role models as well, unfortunately, but like, you know, where they were, it's just the way it was. And we did boxing, we did football, like, you know, we did maths, English booster classes, and it was like, he's an incredible human being. So that's what I learned. Like, you know, maybe I didn't have the presence of mind, like, and that inverted snobbery was probably something that was as big a problem for me, as it was necessarily a problem. But anyway, yeah, we left, because I think there was a bit of bullying. Like, you know, like I don't doubt that.
But we, you know, you're cruel, aren't they? Kids are cruel, but you know, adults can be cruel.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be encountered in many places. But I suppose it's just how you deal with it and where you are at the time.
That's why I ate bullies. I ate bullies, and I would stand up for them, and I have done before, and I will do again. Like,
when? What time? When are you standing up for some bullies? Yeah.
But you know, like, you know, I want to right the inequities that are world, and I know that, like, you know, and sometimes, you know, that might sound like I don't know how to put it, but whenever I see somebody that's getting treated poorly, then I feel like I want to stand up for them.
Of course,
like,
you
know,
do.
Like, and I like, because I hope that inspires other people to feel the same, because otherwise,
and to let them know that it's okay to go, wait a minute, don't speak to them like that. Don't have that. And
swing big and be brave. Like, you know, like, especially in a drama class and stuff like that, you want to turn around. You know, the best work happens when everyone's pulling together. You're as strong as your weakest link. If there's someone like sneering or laughing or whatever, then I remember acutely how horrible that feels, and it stops you from doing your best or trying your best.
Yeah.
And that's what school was all about. Like, for so many people, like, you know, just like, you know, bullies and stuff like that, laughing at people just because they were showing real promise in a certain, like, you know, thing. Like, if you like to sing or dance or act or something like that, well, I went to school, you're gonna get torn down for doing that.
Yeah, but it always says so much more about that person who's laughing or sneering than it does about the other person. I know that's really hard to fathom at the time, because if you're the one that's being laughed at or sneered at, you feel, you shrink.
But yeah, absolutely. But bullies are just projecting their own insecurities forward. Yeah. Like, you know, they've had horrible things happen to them, probably. Like, yeah, you just feel like, you know, just strip it back and just go, why do you feel that way? You know, why is it that you feel that you want to eat misery on other people in order to kind of vindicate your own decisions? Like, you know, that there's something odd about that.
But it's incredible now that most of the time as adults, we can discuss that and approach it like an adult, whereas the you know, we've known it because we've been children, and they just can't do that.
No, no, but I mean, like, you know, in terms of professionally and stuff like that, like, it so rarely happens. But like,
it very rarely happens.
But when it does happen, like, you know,
have you encountered it on set?
I stood up for.
You don't have to name any names, and if you do, we can edit it out. So
I stood up for a costume assistant before. She was getting treated horribly by this actor, and I was like, I'm not having that. And it doesn't matter how big you are, and it doesn't matter that you've had an off day. We've all had like arguments and stuff like that, where we come into work.
Everybody has a bad day.
Yeah. But that doesn't give you carte blanche to go and act like a dick. And that, I just felt that person needed tenon. And so I told them.
And did they listen?
Yeah, I'm 6'3".
As I've said before, you're a very well-structured gentleman. I don't think anybody's going to argue with you.
But it's just a shit. But because actually, like, you know, everybody, like, you know, we're all people that have turned up on set, like, you know, whatever. Often we're a long way away from our friends and family, you know, working long hours, and a lot, like, you know, a lot of actors get to spend a lot of time in a trailer and all that kind of thing as well. I'm not saying it's not a difficult job, it is, but there have been people that are grafting, like, you know, properly, like, you know, grafting 12 to 15 hours and stuff like that. And the idea that you treat somebody with any kind of lack of respect just for me just doesn't feel like being a team player. Like, you know, like, we're all people pulling together, like, you know, to turn
strive for the same goal. You're all working for this, whatever department you're in, you've all got your job to do to the best of your ability.
That's right.
You're all on that same path together,
to create a body of work that we can all be justifiably proud of.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, if you've had an argument or whatever, then you just need to have a word with yourself before you start flying into people, like, you know, or getting, like, you know, delusions of grandeur that you think that it's okay to, like, you know, to treat some, like, you know, like, you know, a lovely kind of 20-year-old girl, like, you know, like
piece of shit.
Yeah. Like, that don't fly with me. And, you know, I hope that nothing like that would ever kind of impact upon my career or have an adverse effect on my career.
Well, how can it? I don't think it can, because that's, you know, and if it does, then you don't want to be around those people, because that's you're throwing out positive vibes there.
You got it,
mate. Cool.
You got it. It's not cool. And, you know, you want to be creating a kind of, like, you know, a creative environment, but also one that everybody just, like, you know, relishes the idea of working in.
Yeah.
You know? And so, what, you know, you've got your own, everyone's got a responsibility to make sure that we're all looking after each other.
So did you feel, after your experience with Bristol, did it worry you that this was the path you wanted to go down? Did you think, oh, I don't really want around all those people? Did it scupper any plans for you?
I was really lucky, because straight away there was another thing called the HTV drama workshop, which was like the TV version of, like, you know, Bristol Old Vic.
And HTV is?
Harlech Television, which is, like, you know, the regional ITV station.
Right, okay.
I think it's called ITV West now, but it was called HTV at the time. And I went there, and then, you know, I felt like I'd arrived. I'll tell you what, do you remember, this is might be a bit of an obscure cultural reference, but do you remember the song No Rain by Blind Melon?
Yes, I do. And do you know why I do?
Why is that?
Because there was a video and it had a very small ginger girl dressed as a bumblebee.
Yes, mate.
Yeah, that's it, right?
And she goes to a talent competition and she does her tap dancing and they all start booing her off and she gets really sad. So she shuffles off, like, you know, as this bumblebee, like, you know, and she's just walking around, everyone's laughing at her. And then all of a sudden she opens this door into this park and the light lifts and it's really sunny and there's a load of other ginger bumblebees just dancing around. She just runs on in and it's like, yeah, and that's it. That's what happened to me. Like, I found my niche. Like, you know, I found my people. There are people from all over Bristol, like, you know, just, like, you know, making, like, you know, making TV and making theatre and all that kind of stuff. I was like, yes, that's it. I'm in. Yeah. And then, like, you know, and it was amazing. Like, you know, every, like, you know, like, for a couple of hours on a Tuesday every week, and then we come in, like, weekends and stuff like that. And again, we had this amazing lady called Vanessa Bewley who was who ran it, and, like, you know, and she was just tireless, just, like, you know, wanted to work so hard with young people and stuff like that. So we had people coming in from BBC to cast for Casualty. We were making, I was at a time where,
and how old were you now, sorry,
15? And we were making our own TV programs. So by the time I got to, I was 16, I left school and I got offered a job there as a, well, not even a runner, I was in a post room delivering post and stuff. And, like, so I worked there for a year as a, like, you know, still going to the drama workshop and stuff, and still making TV programs, like presenting TV programs and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, so you're getting trained in all aspects of camera stuff? Well, so presenting and acting.
Yeah. And there was a cable station called Channel One, which is now, like, you know, no longer with us. But they would let you do anything, really. So I was commentating for Bristol City and Bristol Rovers, like, you know, and so that was great. And
wow.
And at 17, like, this is 97, so I'd lived my entire life under conservative rule. Like, you know, so, because obviously Thatcher came in 79. And so, like, 97, I wasn't old enough to vote, but I was desperate for anybody who was old enough to vote to vote. So I wrote and presented this politics program called In the House, where I got, like, young Labour, young Conservatives, young Liberal Democrats, young Green people to debate the issues and stuff and talk about all that kind of thing to give young people, like, you know, like, the opportunity.
Give them a voice.
To give them a voice and to get young people, like, you know, energised and excited to go out and vote. I mean, obviously there was probably a degree of bias with the way that I'd like them. I wanted them to go, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'd like to think that that I won that general election for Labour. Only 7 people watched it, probably, but it was catharsis for me.
No, you
I
fly got, that like, flag. Exactly. That's good.
No one watched it, but like, you know, I had loads of fun making it and stuff, and I thought that was important. I didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
And how amazing that there were people ready to give some 17-year-old kid like the time, like, you know, to send a cameraman and like a sound guy, professional people with me while I just went there and just interviewed another bunch of, like, you know, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids.
And is this still going, this workshop?
The workshop definitely is.
Is
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so funny because the last thing I heard about this was in episode 1 when we were talking about the Nottingham Television Workshop,
Vicky,
which I know that... a big shout out to the Television Workshop at the moment, because I know that they need support and they need donations. Pop over to their website and look at the incredible work that they do. For kids to learn about camera technique, and it's so inspiring. What a buzz, they must love
but
it.
But again, like, it's people. There was a guy called Sean Sober is there, and Vanessa Beauty, like, they just came with limitless energy, and they got all the ring things going on as well, and they just came there with, like, you know, with so much time and so much heart, you know, because all they wanted to do was inspire young people, and, like, you know, and they did it for so many people, because it doesn't have to be vocational. You know, when I go to, like, you know, the schools and stuff, like, you know, the Bristol Old Vic have sent me to very kindly, I say that it doesn't have to be vocational. When I talk the adult group and stuff like that, it doesn't have to be vocational. Like, we forget, like, you know, we got to find the fun in it. There's loads of fun in acting, and it serves us very well for all our lives. Like, if you're a teacher, you have to stand up in front of people. Like, you know, you're presenting essentially, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're some kind of business leader or whatever, like, if you're talking to people, then everyone benefits from, like, you know, from working with improvisation, working with text and standing up in front of people. You know, it's just more tools to your belt. And, like, you know, and working with improvisation, I think is brilliant anyway, because, you know, you can kind of, like, you know, workshop all kinds of different things, like, you know, things that you're going through, and, like, it gives the disenfranchised and disenchanted people a voice. Well, where they didn't think they'd have it.
There's no ceiling, it's limitless.
That's it.
You just go wherever you want to go.
I work with kids that are, like, you know, they're in the, like, you know, we're on bail and stuff like that, and, like, you know, and we're working with them, and, like, initially they were a little bit reticent or whatever, didn't want to get involved, or young offenders institutions and stuff like that, and they just weren't keen to get involved. But by the end, like, you know, if you leave from the front, you watch these kids, and what they're doing is just taking a step back, because they're giving their characters a different name or whatever. They're able to address their own kind of thoughts and feelings and workshop their own thoughts and feelings out loud, and then take a step back and then analyze those characters and their behaviors and all that kind of stuff. It was amazing to do that. And, like, you know, obviously, you know, like, it's really raw. But there were some great performances there, and I sure that, like, you know, it doesn't have to, like I say, it doesn't have to be, like, you know, it doesn't have to be a life's work to be an actor, but they took so much from it. I know they did. And that's why I'd always be keen to go back out and speak to young people and work with them, because there's an honesty with the things that they do.
Yeah. So at this point, obviously we're going back, there was no way you were putting back on that suit that your dad got you to get out and go and do more jobs, was it? Did you think that now it was, you wanted to be an actor and that was it?
Well, I'm working then as a runner, and then I was a researcher for youth programming. So I worked my way up in those couple of years. Then we all got made redundant because it got taken over by a company called United News and Media.
Right.
But because they tried to appropriate everybody in another job. And the job I was offered then was a sports researcher for Anglia TV. It was in Norwich. When I was 17. Like, I hadn't left them. So,
oh my God.
I was like, right, okay. So my old man, again, what an absolute legend, drove me to 5 hours to, like, you know, to Norwich. And I stuck it, well, I don't know, like, you know, for a few days or whatever. And I was like, nah, this ain't for me. Nah, get me back to Bristol. They sound kind of similar, but... I come back home, and then I went to college, because I got something called accredited prior learning, which meant that for the time that I'd spent in the workplace, I was basically kind of signed off and given a BTEC. I had to go into part-time. I went into college.
And what were you doing a BTEC in?
In performing arts.
Right.
And then I'm like, right, okay.
So this, was this 1 year or 2 year course?
Well, it was a 2 year course, but I came in for the last year because it's accredited prior learning.
Right, perfect.
They basically signed me off my first year. So I finished that. And then all of a sudden, we were talking about university or drama school. And I remember when I was in secondary school, our careers advisor, God love him, said to me, it was so lazy and half-assed. He went, you like holidays? I went, yeah. He went, be a travel agent. All right, yeah, thanks very much. You've been great. No one was expected, or not really anyone at that time in our school was expected to go to university. Only some really kind of really intelligent people. And the rest of us was we were leaving school. Most of my mates left school at 16 and went down the road and got a job.
To drink water. Be a plumber.
Yeah,
lazy is that?
Well, that's it. I don't think, I think he was a bit kind of rule weary. Like, because we talked about those teachers that play their classes like a symphony. You do get the freeloaders that are just turning out to take the money, aren't they? Just been worn down by a lifetime of
box ticking.
Yeah, that's it. And he was one of them. But,
so what was your choice? University or drama school? Did you make one?
Well, do you know what? Weirdly, because I guess I was like, I took advice from anyone because I still didn't know. I didn't know that many people in the industry necessarily. And there was this feeling that, if you go to drama school, you get worn down and they mold you in their own image. And I'm like, this kind of formulaic kind of drama school graduate.
Oh, there's all the horror stories.
Well, that's it. I'm 18 at this point and I didn't know any better. So I'm like, I better get a university because I'm proud of who I am. I've cultivated a personality over the last 18 years. Thanks to my mum and my dad and my friends. I'm an amalgam of all these lovely people. So I don't want to lose that. And and so I'm going to university.
Was it in Bristol?
No, I went.
Surprised.
Yeah, but that's it. I packed up my troubles in my old kit bag and
went to
Middlesex. Middlesex University was in Golders Green in London, and it's got this it's got a really small drama facility, which was Anna Pavlova's old house.
Right.
And it was given to the drama department of the university at the time. I don't think it's there anymore. Well, Anna Pavlova's house still is, but it's not owned by university anymore. And I remember thinking, I'm at university. I can't believe I'm at a university. Like, this is the benchmark of kind of academic prowess or whatever. You're like, what am I doing here? And all I'm thinking is at any point, someone's just going to go, what are you doing here, son? You're out of your depth. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. But you know what? I think I've gone through my whole life like that. Like, waiting to get fanged out.
We all do. It's so funny that you say that because it comes up all the time because we're all waiting to go, excuse me, you shouldn't belong here.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't belong here. It's not you I wanted. It was the other guy.
You haven't got a clue what you're doing. You're like, yeah, but it's been a brilliant ride. Thanks very much, everybody. I'll see you later. So, but I remember having a few ciders in Mules of Residence. And the first thing that happened was in my local pub. I was in Cricklewood, and the local pub, I walked down there and there's police tape outside because someone had got shot. And I'm like,
welcome.
Wow, this is a bit lively. This is not like me Bristolian growing up, not really. No, I've never been anywhere where someone's got shot before. I'm thinking, oh dear, I might lie low for a couple of days and see if I can meet some friends. But I'm in the halls of residence and this girl, I'm friends and I'm best mates at this, with my mate that I met at university. And he's this Asian Geordie lad. And this girl said, I was on our course. She went, I don't know why they call Indians Asians. She went, it's not even in Asia. And I looked at her, I was like, bloody hell. I was like, where do you think it is? She went, it's in Russia. I was like, blimey, you better be a really good actress. And then all of a sudden it was lifted. Like, this kind of spell was lifted. I was thinking, if she's here, then I'm definitely all right here. You know? Like, because, and then I was speaking to my dad, and my dad was just going, blimey, it must be difficult. Like, you know, like, I was like, I want to ring everyone I know and just go, don't want, come to university. You're fine. You definitely belong here. Like, you know, you're like, you know, most of the people I know were head and shoulders, like, you know, above some of the people, like, you know, that were at university. Of course, there were some really, really kind of fine minds there as well.
Yeah.
But I just don't want, like, you know, again, it's that kind of work class cross that I felt like I was bearing at the time or whatever, sure. Just thinking we don't belong here, we should be out and working and stuff like that. And I want to dispel that myth for anybody who's listening who's thinking, oh, I don't know if university is for me. Like, if you're a person, like, you know, and you've got, like, you know, you've got an appetite for bettering yourself and you're happy to read and you're happy to roll out your sleeves and get stuck in, you're on a journey of self-discovery and getting better, then go.
Yeah.
Absolutely go. Like, you know, be the best person you can be and don't let anybody tell you that you can't.
Yeah.
You know,
so obviously actually, you had a great time at university.
I got a scholarship to go and study in America for
no
a year.
No way.
Yeah. They run their, like, in America, they run their, like, their universities like a repertory theatre.
Yeah.
And so in a lot of the cities, actually the city I went to wasn't like this, but a lot of the cities, like, you know, go to universities for their culture really, because there isn't a big kind of theatre scene, in some towns. And so they go to see, like, you know, fantastic theatre, like, you know, that's done, by the universities there. But I got to go to San Francisco, University of San Francisco.
How was that? Just,
amazing. Amazing. Like, yeah, then, like, yeah, you turn up. I mean, yeah, it's amazing for loads of reasons, but, like, you know, obviously, like, you go to London with a Bristolian accent and, you know, when you're trying to chat to ladies or whatever, I couldn't put a tough out of dead horse's head. But then all of a sudden, like, I'm in America and for some, I've affected some kind of, like, you know, Hugh Grant-esque accent. I'm having a wheel of a time. It was hard coming back to London after that.
And how was that? Was that a year there in
yeah,
San Francisco?
There was a guy, again, like our drama teacher there, a professor of drama, was a guy called Edgardo de la Cruz, which is an amazing
great name.
Yeah, great name. And Edgardo, like, you know, was this in, like, you know, incredible kind of inspiration really. And it was a lot more practical there, and, like, you know, we did lots of plays, like, you know, did a three or four kind of productions on the main stage there, which had, like, you know, like a, like sort of 300 or 400 seater auditorium. And, like, you know, you think, right, okay, this, like, you know, this is proper. A lot of money was invested in, like, you know, fantastic, like, you know, sort of lighting and set design and all that kind of thing, and everyone was putting together. So we turned in productions the like of which I've never really seen before. No, well, I've seen before, but I've never been involved in before.
Yeah.
And again, like, you know, it gave you that confidence to think, I can do this. Like, every step of that journey's just been
build and build,
yeah,
and build.
Yeah, yeah. And you think, oh, I can't do it. But why not? Like, have the testicular fortitude to kind of roll a dice and give it a try, and then you're there, you're like, no, I'm doing it. Look at me go. And it's amazing. And you're like, right, okay. So now I come in, finish my degree, and I need money. So the only thing I'm really qualified for at this stage is, like, to go back into TV production. So I go and work as a runner for a company called Therapy Films. Like, you know, and I learned to edit, because I'm you know, when you go to, like, they made commercials, you know, when you go to a commercial audition, like, you know, and then, you know, there's a guy who's on the camera there,
yeah,
like, you know, along with the director and stuff, he's normally about sort of 18, 19. I was that guy.
Right.
You know? So I get to watch a lot of auditions, and you get to see what the directors and producers are making of you when you come and go. And that was
and
amazing.
What they're saying about, yeah, when you, yeah, leave the room.
Ah, brutal. Absolutely brutal. I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, because, like, you know, like, some of the things that get said were out of order. But again, like, you know, actually what you learn as you get older is it's just one person's opinion or two people's opinion, you know,
sure,
whatever. Like,
you so know, you graduated,
yeah,
from university.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when did an agent come about for you?
Well, this is what I'm getting to. So basically I'm working...
Sorry, I feel like I was interrupting you.
No, but I'm working all, I'm working all our hours, and I learned to edit on Final Cut Pro, where we were, like, I was editing all these kind of showreels, all these audition tapes for castings, because I got to ping them over to the production company, to the ad agency and stuff,
yeah,
like that. Like, you know, be like, right, okay, this is our director's five picks, which of our boys or girls do you like, whatever. And so I've been staying quite late, but I'm just, like, you know, I'm just learning as I go. Anyway, I get on really well with the producers and the directors there. There's about five directors that were working, doing commercials. And I just kept going, look, I'm an actor. Like, you know, I'd like to be in one of your commercials. Like, you know, get me in one of your commercials. Ain't gonna hurt. And in the end, they did. They put me in this police training commercial, right? And so what I do then, because I'm just running around getting coffees and teas and lunches and stuff all over Soho, because we're right by Oxford Street where the production company was. I took all the rushes from that advert I was in and I cut it all together where, like, to make a kind of showreel where it looked like, you know, I was on, like, it felt like I was on the bill or something like that. Like I like, you know, properly overegged the pudding, just be like, and some of the rushes look like, you know, look quite good. So I edited together, burnt a load of DVDs, and I dropped them off at every single agent in Soho. Went right there and just hand delivered it.
No way.
Yeah. Because, well, why not? Because I was out there doing coffee runs. I just dropped one off there, dropped one off there.
Brilliant.
And in the end, this agent gave me a call and was like, yeah, we're interested in meeting you. And then I signed my first agent then. Still carried on, like, you know, running, shoot running and, like, in-house running for therapy films. And then...
But you got the ball rolling.
That's it, got the ball rolling. And then there you are. Then all of a sudden, I'm an actor with an agent. All the things you like, every level, like, you know, I always get things like in the future, in a not so distant future, where I'm like, oh, if I could achieve that, then I feel like, you know, I'm proper then. And having my own agent, I'm like, ringing my mum and dad going, got an agent.
Kid in a sweet shop.
Yeah, oh, mate, it was mint. It was absolutely mint. And so I suppose that part of you naively thinks, well, that's me sorted then.
That's it. Plain sailing from
here. Yeah, that's it. Like, you know, I'll be going to LA probably sometime in the next 6 months and I'll be living a life. But yeah, like I remember going for my first audition, which was like for a two-line part as a Bristolian mechanic in Casualty. And I was thinking, you walk out thinking, oh, I nailed that.
In
like,
the bag.
I'm a Bristolian, like, you know.
In all fairness, though, if you came to audition for me and I was a director and it was a Bristolian technician or mechanic, I would definitely give you the part.
Well, this bloke didn't.
Idiot.
Yeah, what an idiot.
He lost out.
And he didn't give me the job. And I was thinking, if I can't get two lines in Casualty as a Bristolian mechanic, then I probably need to have a good hard look at myself. But fortunately, they were wicked on Casualty, really lovely, and they kept getting me back in for like bigger and bigger parts. And then I got the guest lead when I was playing. I played a bulimic bouncer, and everyone thought I was being a bit heavy-handed with my missus because I was a bouncer, but it turned out she was knocking me about. And that's what made me bulimic, because I didn't have anyone to talk to and stuff. It was an amazing part. Really, really good. Like, you know, sunk my teeth into it and really loved it. And because we were filming in Bristol, I remember getting back after a day's filming and it went really well. And the guy who played Charlie, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, grabbed my arm. He was just like, he went, that was really good. And I was like, Charlie Fairhead, what a really good. I got back to my hotel room in the city I grew up in, where I'm looking out all over the city centre, and I was jumping up and down on the bed, like, you know, like, and just like, just unmitigated, unbridled joy. Because you're like, this is mint. Like, you know, someone's put me up in a hotel in my own city, and like, you know, a show that I've been watching my whole life, and like the one of the main men on it, it just said how good I did. And I was like, I don't get much better than that. Like, it was, yeah. I'm buzzing.
Honestly, your positivity is infectious. And that's no sort of soundbite. I absolutely really mean that. I think it's beautiful. But, and I don't know whether I need to ask this question because I probably know what the answer is. How do you deal with the dark times when stuff isn't coming in, when the auditions aren't there and the meetings aren't there?
It's hard, isn't it? Because, like, you know, They say that you're, like, you know, as good as your, or like, you know, you only feel as good as your last job and stuff, and you think, oh, I'm on my way now, I feel like I've made some headway, and then all of a sudden...
But it don't work like that, does
nah, it? No. Like, you know, then all of a sudden, it goes for a real barren spell. Like, you know, you feel like you've pushed this rock up a hill, this boulder up a hill your whole life, then all of a sudden, you're there, or you've plateaued, so you're rolling it, it's getting easier, and then all of a sudden, you're rolling it downhill, you're like, oh, it's a dollar, then all of a sudden, there's another hill that you didn't anticipate. But... You know, it's a ride, isn't it? Like, that's how you got to look at it. You can't take anything too seriously. Like, you know, like...
So you still treat that with as much positivity as when it's going well?
I love
I love acting, and it's a life's work for me. Like I want to get better and better. And like, you know, no one's going to turn in the, like, you know, the perfect performance. And if you have, like, please tell me how you've done it. Like, you know, but I relish the opportunity to go in, like, you know, especially if you're doing a play and it doesn't go so well, to go back and try and rectify that the following night, or find something different or whatever. Just playing, like getting paid to play and investigate, like, you know, the human psyche and breaking it all down is just the best thing in the world. You know, like, you know, when it don't work so well, like, look at all the other things you got in your life, like all your mates, like, you know, incredible family, like, you know, be grateful for your health. Be grateful that Bristol City aren't getting relegated. There's like, because the thing is, you're like, you know, you're not just an actor. Like, you know, you're a son, and you're a father, and you're a boyfriend, and you're a mate, and you're all of those things. And I feel like we spend all our time, it's like, it's innate in human nature to focus on the things that aren't going so well. So yeah. If like, you know, if you're not acting as much as you'd like or whatever, rather than just think, I've got a fantastic girlfriend, I've got a lovely, healthy son, you know, I'm just like, oh why didn't that go my way? Or like, you know, and sometimes you got to take time to smell the roses, and that's hard. Like, that's hard. Like, everyone says it and pays lip service to it, because it can be hard, and it's okay to be a bit self-indulgent sometimes. We're fallible people, you know.
Yeah,
it's all right. It's all right to revel, like, and wallow in a bit of self-pity, but at some point you've got to dust yourself down and just go, you know what, it ain't so bad, and it's just a ride.
Joe Semmes, absolute joy and a pleasure to meet you.
Such a pleasure, man. Thank you for
coming
me.
On
Wicked.
Perfect. What about that? I told you, didn't I? Joe Semmes, what a lovely guy. That was it, episode 14. We're done and dusted. I'm not going to blather on for too much longer. I think I did that at the start. Make sure... Oh, one thing, please do us a favour, right? Rate and review. Yeah, if you're on iTunes, just, you know, click the 5 stars, you might as well. Drop a little line, tell us what you like, what you don't like. We're thrilled to say at the moment, I think we've had about 45 reviews so far. So that's not everybody that's downloading, yeah, considering there's been thousands, tens of thousands. Drop us a line, let us know. But the 5 stars so far, you haven't had a bad word to say, so I'm thrilled that you're enjoying it and we're doing something right. We just want to be honest and bring you good chats every week. I don't want to sound like Alan Partridge there. Hopefully I don't. Look, take care of yourself. Have a great week. Hit us up on email, social media. Let us know what you're thinking. And... we will see you bright and early next Thursday. I've been Craig Parkinson. He has been producer Griff. Staying silent. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. I'll see you next week. Take it easy. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.